Today is Tuesday, March 13th, the year 2001. We're in East Lansing on the campus of Michigan State University. I'm Jeff Charnley, interviewing Vice President Ronald T. Flynn for the Michigan State University Oral History Project for the sesquicentennial that'll be commemorated 4 years from now in the year 2005. Mr. Flynn, you see that we have a tape recorder here. Do you give us permission to record this interview?
Absolutely.
I'd like to start first with your little bit on your personal and educational background. Where were you born and raised? And ultimately, the question will be, how did you come to Michigan State?
All right. My roots go back to central New York. I was born in on a dairy farm in a very rural area without running water or electricity. But it was within the shadow of Colgate University, 5 miles away, which gave me a very early focus on wanting to go to college, even though no one in the family had or wanted to. And as I approached, when I was a junior in high school, I decided that I was going to go into engineering. And even though I was only 15, I got out of high school when I was 16. But without resources. So MSU's principle, one of their principles of having access for folks is very big with me, because this is out in time and with my story, but not having financial resources, I had to find a school that I could attend that was low cost. And I had the opportunity to go to Buffalo, New York, and attend a two-year college called Erie County Technical Institute. They had a program, construction technology, which is as close to civil engineering as I could find that I could afford. This was back in the mid-50s. I got out of high school in 54, and all the engineering schools were private and thus very expensive. So I started at Erie County Technical Institute. My dad was a small contractor in Buffalo, which I worked there with him while I was going to school. And Erie County Tech also had a cooperative training program. And so at the tender age of 17, I was placed into Crabiel and Crabiel Civil Engineers out on Sheridan Drive. 20-person civil engineers, land surveyor outfit, and it was love at first sight. I mean, this is what I was going to do for life, except it was going to say Flynn and Associates over the front door. And so after completing the two-year degree, and I did have another night job, which was on the Courier Express, where I wound up being chief copy boy, which was my first supervisory experience.
That was a newspaper in Buffalo?
Major daily newspaper in Buffalo, mm-hmm. Which no longer exists, sadly to say, but was some of the best experience I've ever had. But it was a night job because it was a morning newspaper. And so when I finished my degree, two-year degree, I went to work for the Union Carbide in Niagara Falls as a designer. And worked there until September of 57, at which time I got married and moved to East Lansing. Now, also during the 3 years I was in Buffalo, I had joined the New York National Guard Corps of Engineers and had moved up to a position of Sergeant E5. It was a position also called for Master Sergeant. So I worked in battalion headquarters, which worked out nicely because I was working with majors and colonels, and that was a great insight. And also, because of not having any money, I entered military competition and wound up being in a position to turn down an alternate assignment to the Air Academy. Mm-hmm. Because by the time that offer came along, I had made the decision to come to Michigan State. But that was a engineering-related education, which would have been free, but by the time I got the offer, getting married and coming to Michigan State looked like more fun. And so I did it. Arrived here in September of 57. My wife agreed to work. Her name is Noreen, N-O-R-E-N-E. She agreed to work while I went to school, and life should get better. I had the good fortune, housing was so tight when we got here that we wound up buying a house trailer back of Coral Gables, and the person living next door was a chap by the name of Joe Cavanaugh, who was already working here on this campus. I believe he started working here in 55 after he graduated. He's an electrical engineer. And I told Joe I needed a part-time job. And the next day or so, when I was registering, which was over at the auditorium, he met me on the stairway coming out of the basement where they stripped the money off of you. And you went up to the pit on the first floor to try to get your classes. He met me and said, when you get through registering, come over to the North Campus Power Plant. There may be an opening for a student employee. I did that, met George Karras. And George has an interesting background. He was an engineer. And I'll come back to George in a minute. But George, after interviewing me, he asked me if I'd had any piping experience. And it turned out I'd become the pipe expert at Union Carbide. Wondered where I'd ever use that knowledge again. And the only question George asked me was, have you ever done any piping drawings? And I'd spent a year and more plus doing piping drawings. And so he turned to Adam Hulanek, who was then the plant engineer, I believe was his title, and said we should hire this fellow. And they did. And so I started working here about 3 days before I started classes. And I've never left, okay? So for 3 years, I was working part-time, full-time in the summer. And then when I graduated, I was asked to stay on for a year or so, and that was 1960. Mm-hmm. One of the summers, 58, was a very bad year economically in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And in those years, the state of Michigan totally was financed by a 3% sales tax. And car sales went into the dumper. So there was this great recession. And so student employees were notified they could only work 20 hours a week. Well, I was desperate to work more than that, but I had no connections in the community. And fortunately, on the Friday before this rule was to kick in, I was informed that if I was willing to go down into the power plant of the North Campus and help the maintenance guys, I could work 40 hours a week. I jumped at the chance, worked for a fellow by the name of Kenny Green, who retired a few years ago, tearing down a 3-megawatt General Electric turbine. Real hot, dirty work, but made a lot of great good friends in the power plant. And that experience bode well for me because when I was interviewing for my current position, there was only one other candidate who had actually had power plant experience. So you just never know when these experiences will come back to help you. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk about George Karras for a minute because George was selected to go down to what is now Oakland University mm-hmm. to start that campus. And worked very closely with Mrs. Matilda Wilson, who had donated her property so that a branch campus could be established and eventually spun off into being Oakland University. And I've not seen George in quite a few years now, but I know I did talk to a colleague of his who said he seems to be in good shape, and I hope to hear from him. Mm-hmm. But
and he headed physical plant there? And
yes.
Was
yes, yes. Yeah, from virtually starting in a chicken coop. So that was a very interesting history.
How was it that you heard about the campus when even before you came?
Professor Patton at the two-year college at Erie County Tech advised a friend of mine, Bob Abel. Bob and I had decided to go out and get a four-year degree in civil engineering. And he didn't have any money either. And so we were exploring low-cost schools. And there was one out in South or North Dakota, a school of mines, as I remember, and very, very, very low tuition. And so we talked to Professor Patton, who was our math instructor, who was a professional engineer. He's the one who explained what a PE was to all of us folks, and which made another goal in life is to become licensed to practice engineering. And Harry Patton said, well, boys, said that might be a very fine school. But of course, he was a product of the Depression. And so he said, that may be a very fine school, but he said, I'd suggest that you want to go to a school where the title of the school is known more than 30 miles out of town. because your next assignment after you graduate is to get a job, but first you have to get an interview. And maybe if they've heard of the school, they'll at least talk to you. And given that advice, I sent off letters to Penn State, University of Michigan, Michigan State, and Illinois. Michigan State was the only, other than Illinois, Illinois and Michigan State were willing to discuss giving us credits for our two-year degrees. The other schools wouldn't. East Lansing is closer to Buffalo than Champaign, which we never visited. Mm-hmm. And so we came here, and the reception was just really great. There was a lady over in the College of Engineering who was known as the engineer's friend, and her name eludes me at the moment, but I'll try to come back to it. When we were in talking at the counter in Olds Hall, she rushed out of her office and said, you two guys have graduated from a two-year college. And she said, I'm on a Blue Ribbon panel here in Michigan. We're establishing community colleges. I want to talk to you. And so she sat us down and said, we're having a real time discussing whether we should grant two-year degrees or whether the credit should be fully transferable. And I told her that obviously we would love to have had credits that were fully transferable. But I said, most of the folks that graduated with us were happy with their two-year degrees. So I said, if possible, it would be great if you could do both. And in fact, that's what got established. Mm-hmm. How much influence my advice had on that, I don't know. But at least it was really neat to be asked our opinion, having had that experience. Mm-hmm. I'll try to remember her name, but mm-hmm. I don't recall it right now.
We can add it.
Yeah, she was an associate dean mm-hmm. or assistant dean, mm-hmm. and she was known as the engineer's friend, and that goes back to the mid-50s. Mm-hmm.
What was your impression of the campus when you first arrived?
Well, I need to share another thing with you about the campus. There were a couple of guys that were on cooperative training or summer training at Union Carbide. This is how Union Carbide used to recruit people, by bringing them in for the summer, who was attending Michigan State. So they said good things about Michigan State. It probably was a little prior to that, when I was saying to one of my coworkers that I was thinking of going to Michigan State, and the city editor spun around, named Gaskin, and he said, have you been there? And I said, no. And he said, well, I got to tell you, it's maybe the most beautiful campus in this country. And he went on to explain how he had no children, and he and his wife, for a vacation, every year would get in a car and start driving across this country. And any campus he got close to, he stopped in and drove around it and looked at it. So he'd visited hundreds. So that was a great thing to hear, mm-hmm. that this place really was neat looking.
And even so, before you got here?
Before I got here. And before I talked to these fellows at Union Carbide who were taking, one guy I knew was taking electrical engineering. And so they also spoke well of the place. And so then with my visitation on the attempt to transfer credits, went well, and so as a result, then we came here.
Mm-hmm. What was the southern limit of the campus when you came, in terms of the physical size?
It was beyond Mount Hope, because the barns, houses and barns were still existent on the south side of Mount Hope, as I recall, mm-hmm. and some of those were being taken down. Mm-hmm.
The golf course, Forest Acres, wasn't there.
Yeah, Forest Acres was there. Okay. So I believe that we owned to Forest Road.
Okay.
And the radio station was up, and we owned, I think, beyond there. No, I'm not sure. I know that I would say that definitely to Forest Road at that point. Mm-hmm. But Hannah was in the process of buying more land. Mm-hmm. So it was, because of the golf course, we owned down to Forest Road. And I think a little further south, mm-hmm. Into what is now the beef cattle barn. So it's possible that we owned a Bennett Road. That mm-hmm. wouldn't surprise me, even in 57, mm-hmm. that he had purchased it. But some of the barns and houses were being taken down, so we hadn't owned them for a great long time at that point.
How'd you balance your work with your studies?
Since I explained that when I was in Buffalo that I had... when I was in Buffalo, I either worked two full-time jobs, or was attending school plus working nights. When I was on cooperative training, it was two full-time jobs because I worked for the newspaper almost all the time I was at the two-year college at Erie County Tech. So, and that was 40 hours a week. Here, the work was during the day, so I only worked during breaks between classes. So we would try to have, we had to have at least a two-hour period of time, and the campus was smaller in those years so we could get back to the power plant. I believe it was 10 minutes between classes. But you would try to push your classes into a half a day so you'd could come in for a full half day, but usually it was more like 3-hour blocks of time. You would get as much time in as possible, so you can see that the number of hours I worked at Michigan, we did work weekends as well with the survey crew, and then a full-time in the summer, but the number of hours I put in while I was a student at Michigan State was far less than when I was in Buffalo because I worked full-time nights. But of course, the curriculum was more rigorous here. Mm-hmm. My memory tells me the tuition here was $85 a term. Take all the credits you can. Now, maybe it was as low as $65. Mm-hmm. I had to pay an extra $100 because I was out of state. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's a very different dollar than today. Mm-hmm. But I was just absolutely amazed and delighted with how low cost the education was here at Michigan State.
Did you get any break at that time for being an employee too, or
no?
That wasn't part of it.
No,
just the job.
Yeah.
Were there any important and influential professors that you remembered or recall?
Leo Nostein. Mm-hmm. Prof. Lee. Charlie Cutts. There's a fellow by the name of Ringo, who is a structural designer. And there's a couple of other ones that I can't recall their names right now. Mm-hmm. They're in the engineering field. I don't recall who, I took an elective called Business Letter Writing, which was a great course to take. I learned real early on at the two-year college, writing and being able to speak well were pretty important. You got to be able to represent yourself. So in polishing it, because we had a lot of writing there, we had to do reports, which I at the two-year college, and I found my colleagues here at Michigan State had never had that experience of having to really write and understand how you do technical reports. And then I went on to take this business letter writing, which was really a plus. There's a lady that was in ATL, American Thought and Language, Culpepper.
Marilyn
Culpepper.
Marilyn Culpepper.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And delightful lady. I talked to her, I think, within the last year, and I got to meet her husband, who was over in the College of Engineering in only in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. But I knew her from my student days. She was a delightful person to have, and really high quality.
Mm-hmm. A gracious person, I know her well.
As
a colleague. Okay. So
she's super. Mm-hmm. The whole place was super. I stayed here in 1960 for a year or so. That was the offer, and I was on what was called a labor payroll, which had absolutely no security. You're just grateful July 1st you're still on the payroll. And people say, and the pay was not very good. It was the worst of the three offers I had, but I didn't have to move. We liked the community, but it was such a, I was treated so well as a student employee, so that was a plus. And then it was just an honor to be asked to be on the team with John Hanna to build this megaversity. Mm-hmm. Not everybody was asked to stay. Mm-hmm. And so it was truly an honor to be asked, and it was just great, good fun. I'm still here.
In those early years, in the 1960s, and you mentioned John Hanna and his vision, how did he convey that to people?
I'll tell you an experience I had, and it's caused me to meet all my new employees and to meet the people who are promoted, which I think is very important to do. I remember the day that John Hanna walked across a large room to introduce himself to me. And this was no later than 63, okay? And at that time, John Hanna was co-chair of the Civil Rights Commission with Father Hesburgh. He was also Undersecretary of Defense for this country, as well as being president of this university. Just a high, wide profile person. And so that was a stellar day, which I still remember very well. And he did that kind of that personal thing. He was, you know, he was quite a stern, all business kind of a guy, but he also took time to say something to people as he would meet with them. And he, when he would make a speech, when he would talk to groups, his vision of this institution really came across. It also was obvious for those who really took a hard look is that he didn't have necessarily a vision that this campus would get as big as it has gotten. And it was in the 60s when there was a front page, he was on the picture of, I believe, U.S. News and World Report, and the question underneath was, is 35,000 too big? And the campus was growing to that level. And so he was quoted in that article as to the impact of having that many students, and it was obvious that this was a big question. Was this just getting too big? And so, you know, his vision, he was very big in the international scene. He took advantage of situations. Obviously, the GI Bill was the driving force to allow so many people to go to college after World War II. And so he opened the doors, and I'm sure he was urged by the state of Michigan to make room for these folks. And in order to accomplish it, they brought in the Quonset Village and they brought in all the barrack buildings which existed in this area when I arrived. This was a big place when I arrived. I mean, I recall 17,000 students. I've seen it written that it was 19,000 students when I came here in 57. But the physical size of the place, we had in this, where our building, here, physical plant building is now located, this was covered with barrack apartments. So it was developed, if you will. The part of the campus that wasn't developed is what we call the science campus, which is east of Farm Lane and south of Shaw Lane. Those were the cow barns and the bull barns. So that was farmland, and where the engineering building now is was a sheep barn, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And then there was a horse barn that was being used as a laundry, which was on the south side of Shaw Lane, west of a fire station, some distance. It was setting where now the north end of Wonders Hall is. So. But in physical size, this campus was huge compared to what I'd seen. Because I'd never been at a school where there was more than 5,000 students before I arrived at Michigan State.
What in the 60s? What were the areas that you developed as a specialty or that you were responsible for, or how'd that change over time?
Well, the area that I focused on were two areas. Although I was trained as a civil engineer and had taken some advanced classes in structural design, there wasn't much structures to do. And so one had to be willing to do HVAC, heating, ventilating, and air conditioning. We didn't have much air conditioning then, but some was starting because we were shifting into becoming a research institution. But we built Bessie Hall in 63 without air conditioning the offices. It was the first building where classrooms are air-conditioned. And so MSU was slow in adding air conditioning because Hanna could see it was quite costly. But about 63, it was being realized that had to happen. So the chemistry building was air-conditioned and biochemistry. And so we started in that vein. So I was willing to do HVAC design. First worked with a fellow by the name of Rini Hauser. He was a student initially, and then he went to Eastern Michigan years later, about 63, I suppose. And then I did utility design. And a big focus on steam tunnels. In fact, I designed the first steam tunnels that were built since the 30s. This was in 63. The first steam tunnel was from the Shaw Lane plant to the what was then the New Engineering Building. And we proved that we could do walk-through tunnels as cheaply as direct buried, which you had to do things very inexpensively in those days. Peter McPherson likes to do things inexpensively as well. And so I do not find his focus foreign at all, because under Hanna, the watchword was save every dollar possible for an expanding campus. Mm-hmm. So write that, that was a motto, mm-hmm. save every dollar possible for an expanding campus. So that's part of the Hanna image, mm-hmm. all right? Our marching orders.
Mm-hmm. Do more with less.
That's right. Certainly get a lot done with what you got. Mm-hmm. And we did. The question, it wasn't clear that we'd get a cyclotron. Henry Blosser was able to do that. But obviously Blosser was recruited here mm-hmm. with that in mind. So when you talk about Hanna's image of where we were going, he was an opportunist. He took advantage of the GI Bill, with all the students coming here, because he really turned this from a small residential campus to a mega international university.
Did you continue at all with the National Guard work or no?
No. It turned out that the commitment was for 8 years, and when I arrived in Michigan, it was like, well, all right, you were discharged from 3 years New York National Guard. Your commitment with the reserves is for 8 years. You should be an active reserve unit. I said, well, I was in the Corps of Engineers. They said, well, there's one in Detroit. And I said, well, I don't even have a car. They said, all right, we'll put you on inactive reserve. Mm-hmm. 5 years later, I got a full discharge from the military. So I got through relatively easy. In the 50s, it was understood that you would be in the military for 2 years. Mm-hmm. It was almost universal unless you got married, and especially if you had kids. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do that. That quickly, and so I was always at risk. But you got to remember that Sputnik went up in 57 mm-hmm. when I arrived here. Mm-hmm. Then if you were taking engineering, they wanted you to complete that degree because they wanted your skill possibly in defense. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting times. I didn't want to have the military experience, and I really liked the military, but I didn't want to delay getting a college degree. Mm-hmm. My goal was to get a four-year degree as quickly as possible. It took me, and I had the resources, I could have graduated in 58 rather than 1960 with my four-year degree.
Mm-hmm. So your initial contribution was through the steam tunnel development?
That was a big one because two international organizations had me come and speak and present our story of walk-through steam tunnels at Michigan State. Mm-hmm. The District Heating Association, back then they were called the International District Heating Association, and also the International APA organization, which is the Association of Physical Plant Administrators for Colleges and Universities.
It's APPA?
Yeah, APPA. And so that was, those presentations were made 1970, mm-hmm. around 1970.
How did some of the myths about the steam tunnels develop here that students had and that sort of thing? That's part of the history of the university.
Yeah,
that people talk
I've been
about,
accused of creating Dungeons and Dragons.
it's part of your design.
Yeah, they said, well, that emanated from here, and I'm not sure that's fully true, but somebody maybe was pulling my leg. Mm. With having walked through steam tunnels, for the most part, the students discovered they could pop a manhole cover open and get into the tunnel, and then they had good fun traveling around. Mm-hmm. And as a consequence, we had to employ a lockdown device so that we eliminated that from happening. The interesting thing is that part of the Dungeons and Dragons business related to Michigan State. An article I read pointed out to an area under Olds Hall And in fact, it wasn't a tunnel. It was just like it was part of the an unexcavated portion or partially excavated portion of the basement. So somehow that was related as being a steam tunnel. Mm-hmm. There are steam pipes in there, but it's not part of the tunnel system. So I think there was a lot of stretching of the story to say that the steam tunnels, that and most of mine are on the South Campus, caused that story to be generated. But during those late 60s, the students liked to do tunneling. Uh-huh. They call it, we're going to go tunneling. And so the police, of course, got involved in this, and there's some hazard of having people roaming around the tunnels. And so we put these lockdown devices, which eliminated it.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. What other aspect of the physical plant that you dealt with in the, maybe, let's say, the late 60s, early 70s?
Well,
How did you get involved in construction?
Well, all right, late 60s, John Hanna's brother-in-law, and starting in about 63, 64, something like that, John Hanna's brother-in-law, Vince Vandenberg, offered to come and be the construction superintendent because of the vast number of projects that were taking place. So he was on board certainly by 65. And became a mentor of mine, which was turned out to be quite great for a young fellow. Vince Vandenberg had actually put in the bridges for George Patton in World War II.
Oh.
So this is a guy that could get up in the morning and get something done. and he had his own construction company.